Jim Shoemaker and Scott Jordan are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Whether you're a baby boomer or a millennial, it doesn't seem to matter. A common concern is always money. Well, welcome to today's program. We've got a lineup for you. I think that you're going to find to be interesting. We're going to talk with Rusty Leonard. We're going to dive into what's going on with the economy, get his take, an update from him. And that's so important for us because it gives us kind of a mid-year look at what we've got for, you know, what's happened and what do we look forward to in the future. He's going to talk about recession. He's going to talk about why is the market up? And that's a great question. Also, Scott Jordan is going to talk about some questions that you've asked. We've got a very important question about buying a house, a 401k plan, and a savings account. All those tied together. We appreciate Ron and Lynn letting us know that type of question. We think it's important. And coming up in the second half of the program, Shannon Dyson is going to talk about an update on healthcare. Have you ever felt like you're out of control when it comes to your healthcare costs? That's what he's going to help us understand and really give us some insight into what it means to be a fiduciary if you happen to be in charge of your company's 401k plan. That's coming up in the program, but first and foremost, I'm excited about our guest, Mr. Rusty Leonard. He is the founder and CEO of Stewardship Partners Investment Council. Rusty, as always, welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you, Jim. As always, it's a pleasure to be
here.
Well,
I appreciate that. I've got so much to ask you. You always give us this great insight to what's going on. And I guess my first question coming, since you manage money, a lot of money for a lot of people, I really want to get your take on why. Why are we looking at the market today being at an all-time? We're really pushing it up. We're moving the market up. It's a, you know, we've got day after day after day of positive, movement. And is that, what does that mean? What are we seeing? I mean, I know there's some thoughts about everybody wanting to get caught up and all the retail investors moving in. What's your take?
Well, I was hoping you were going to tell me because it's pretty confusing to understand why this market is up.
I hear you.
All right. I'm supposed to be the expert.
You are.
So I'll give you my best shot at it. It is kind of crazy. As anybody with a little bit of common sense can understand, if you just kind of look around, you say things are not all that great in so many respects in our country and in our economy. But yet the market's just ignoring all the normal red lights and just kind of running them. You have a risk of inflation. You have a banking crisis just in the background. I could go on and on for your whole half hour that we're going to spend just talking about some of the things that have and are happening that investors should be factoring into their overall outlook and, giving them some weight. And instead, they're ignoring all that because artificial intelligence is going to change the world. And you got to buy the seven stocks that investors believe are going to benefit from the most from that. They just happen to be the seven largest stocks out there, largest tech stocks. And so there's this huge flow of money coming from both institutional and retail. But retail is really driving the train here at the moment. And it's a fear of missing out. And it's not intelligent investing. It's kind of lunacy investing. We haven't had the market, there hasn't been a 1% decline on a daily basis in the market for I don't know how long. There hasn't been a 5% decline of any magnitude in many, many weeks, almost a year, I think. I think we're closing in on three quarters of a year, if not more than that. It's a one-way trade, and, facts don't matter because you're in a bubble. And once you get into a bubble, anything can happen. And it's always hard to know when that bubble will burst. What you do know is the bubble will burst, but you don't know how long it will be before it does burst. So for professional investors who actually look at the facts and are trying to figure things out using rational thought, common sense, those types of normal things, it's a very difficult time. And most professional money managers are therefore underperforming.
When you think about that underperforming, and again, You know, we talk about principles of investing on the show a lot. We have actually been going through a whole series there. We talk about knowing yourself, knowing your emotions, and, you know, having a long-term, you know, approach to investing and long-term a strategy. And but then letting those emotions sometimes get out of hand and you become an emotional investor. And that's not healthy. And then we talk about don't lose money. Don't invest in something that's fraud. But one of the biggest things that we talk about is avoiding following the herd. And we talk about the fear of missing out, and you just mentioned that, and that is so critical because that it's the retail investor that's kind of chasing and pushing this market up. But you talk about a bubble. We've experienced a bubble in tech stocks back in the late 90s, and is this a repeat? Are we really looking at something very similar, or are we already there? Or
I'd say yes and no. Right. So in many ways, obviously, just the way the market is behaving with only going up, never going down, facts don't matter, all that kind of stuff. That is true. I would say one of the major differences here in this bubble is that it's focused on just a relatively few stocks that are very large.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I was reading something from a newsletter that we get from Crossmark Global, and they talk about recession and go through this whole idea and thought process. And I guess, I mean, as we look at, you know, inflation continues to come down a little bit. We've got the wages going up a little bit. You know, things seem to be kind of, you know, balancing out, maybe a recession. But here's the statistic that I thought was kind of some facts that, you know, that really kind of lay it out for a recession. Every president who avoided recession 2 years prior to a re-election wins the election. Every president that, you know, did not avoid and they had a recession 2 years prior to their re-election lost the election. Now, with that in mind, I guess I'm setting you up with this one, I guess, Rusty. With that in mind, are we looking for a recession, a mild recession? I mean, we've gone from, I mean, believe it or not, a year ago, we had 9.1 core inflation, 9.1% core inflation. Today, we're at, what, four, a little over four. And I mean, things are, are we going to have a recession? And then what is it going to be like?
So we're closer to 5%, 4.8% on core inflation. And that's what the Federal Reserve is going to be focused on. So they're going to continue to raise rates. They'll raise rates again next week. They may raise rates further. And there's an unusually weird dynamic going on in the market where people are focused on the decline in inflation, but just kind of discounting the idea that maybe part of the reason inflation is declining is because the economy is weakening. And it's not only our economy, it's the Chinese economy, it's the European economy, it's the global economy. And so, yeah, I'm pretty certain that we're going to have a recession. And in my update to clients this past week, I included chart after chart. I just was so frustrated. So I'm going to throw all the charts at my clients and just let them see it for themselves. And, you know, normally I try to just, you know, pick a good one and put it in there. But I threw like 20 charts on the whole reason why we should expect a recession to occur. There's a whole lot of people that are in the camp that the Fed somehow, this one time in history, is going to be able to engineer the always hoped for soft landing in the economy, that the economy slows down but doesn't go into a recession. Well, we're already in a profits recession. Corporate earnings have been lower. This will be the third straight quarter, and it'll be the worst of all the three quarters for corporate earnings in the second quarter of this year. So we've had three quarters of earnings falling. All those big company stocks, those big tech stocks that are rallying, many of them have seen their earnings estimates decline over the last year to date. So earnings are not usually, you know, stocks go up because earnings go up or because interest rates go down. Well, interest rates have gone up, earnings have gone down, the stock market's gone up, the money supply is negative. I mean, there's just nothing here for people like myself who actually study the actual facts to hang on to justify a bullish position. It's really madness. It's just total madness. But we see that throughout our culture. And so, yeah, I think Biden, he's going to be probably out of office, if not because he's going to face a recession sometime in the very short-term period. I mean, obviously, from a physical perspective, you know, my heart goes out to the man. He's not capable of being president even right now, let alone in 4 years.
So you don't feel like the recession would affect him? I mean, if we had a recession, what is your, you don't think that's going to be?
No, it would definitely. No, it would definitely affect him. I can't see him. Actually, I can't see how he's going to be the candidate for the Democratic Party. I just don't think physically he's able to do that. So
let me shift to a question that I think a lot of us are concerned about, especially when we see this happening. What's your concern, or are you concerned about the depletion of our strategic petroleum reserve? I mean, that's a top. If you just go back a few years, we wouldn't even thought about this. Today, it's becoming a topic of discussion. Are you concerned about that?
I am super concerned about that. I've never seen such a more idiotic thing that the government has done at a time where we might be on the verge of a global world war, and we're depleting our energy reserves. Now, granted, we have the capacity to create enough energy here in the United States, but in time of war, you don't know what's going on, and there are certain types of fuel that we need to get from others, even though we produce enough for ourselves, or different grades of fuel. So, yeah, this is just insanity, and I don't even know why we're doing it at this stage of the game. Is it going to continue to deplete it? We're down to almost half the full level, down 44%, I think it is now, from since Joe Biden, you know, used the depletion of those strategic energy reserves to, you know, help in the midterm elections to keep gas prices lower. Just total insanity. Meanwhile, Jim, over in China, their economy's falling. Their use of oil should be declining. Instead, it's continuing to rise because I suspect, not that they release any facts about this, but I suspect they are preparing for, you know, a potential global war, and they are building up their energy reserves. So just madness and foolishness on the part of our leadership right now.
If you just tuned in, I'm talking with Rusty Leonard, founder and CEO of Stewardship Partners Investment Council. We're getting just an economic update. We've covered everything from a recession to tech bubble. I mean, it just goes on and on. Interest rates, you know, what are we going to do as far as looking at the, you know, if we have a recession? I guess my question to you, we talked about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Biden's reelection. You mentioned global war. Now, you mentioned China, so let me couch this and put it together in my take and see what I heard someone, we've got into a discussion about this. If I was a troubled economy and was in charge of getting us out of that troubled economy in a drastic or traumatic way, and I didn't care what I did, history would tell us that a lot of the leaders, especially if you were a dictator, you would start a war. Is that a possibility with China? And I mean, we're talking about far-fetched, but that's on a lot of people's mind. It's on the Pacific Fleet's mind. I mean, you know, it's on our, what about our services? You know, do we have the ability to go to war? Do you see that as even a slight possibility?
Oh, I think it's gone beyond the realm of slight possibility. If we really knew what was going on in China, and we kind of know some things in terms of their economy and how things are falling apart there, you know, the odds of their leadership there saying, "Hey, we need to rally the troops here. We need to get, you know, all the commoner who, you know, they have 21% employment amongst their youth, right? So, what's one good way to get the youth happier? You know, declare war, mobilize the armed forces, you know, spur the economy, bring the guys in to do something instead of sitting there on the street, you know, wasting time." I think the possibility of that, the political impetus domestically within China for them to do something that would stem the flow of this declining economy and this bubble, this enormous property bubble that they have that's blowing up in front of their face. Their largest property developer, or second largest, I can't remember which, just reported earnings after a two-year lapse of not reporting earnings. It was a $121 billion loss for this bank, now bankrupt company, Evergrande. They have huge, huge problems. And one way to kind of divert the populace's attention away from that is to get involved in a war and get the nationalism thing going, you know, start waving the flag a lot. And they're not really ready, probably militarily, for that, to attack Taiwan, but they might be ready politically, and they might just take their chances. And then, of course, if you're looking at the United States and you see Joe Biden as your leader with Kamala Harris as his backup, you're probably thinking this is the time to act.
That is on a lot of people's mind. What's your take for the rest of the year, sir? We've got a lot of positive, some things positive, but a lot of headwinds that are very much real. So what's your take for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, so you're right. There are some positives. But the problem is that stocks more than adequately reflect those positives. And there's also negatives. And the market does not reflect any of the negatives at all. So my take for the rest of the year would be that there's going to be continued trouble. We have obviously a lot of political concerns, both with, the Bidens and their legal issues, as well as Trump and his legal issues. We've got an economy that's probably on the precipice of a recession. It's hard to tell how deep a recession will be. We have corporate earnings already down. We have valuations on stocks very, very high, especially on the biggest stocks in the indexes. I think the market's probably going to trend lower. However, and maybe in a big crash, of course, we're kind of set up for kind of a crash. So beware, October's coming, and that's when the crashes occur. And so I'm definitely on the sidelines for right now. It's just the setup. If you have, if you're a thinking man, you look at the facts, and you realize that facts will matter at some point. I can't tell you how long the bubble's going to go on. It could go on longer. It's gone on, in the past, some of these bubbles have gone much longer than I've ever thought possible, but they always burst. Mm. And so I would suggest that rationality will come into play and we'll have a bubble burst before long.
Wow, great, great information. My guest, Rusty Leonard, he is the founder and CEO of Stewardship Partners Investment Council, always does a good job. Rusty, you really bring it to the table for us. You give us a view that I think all of us need to be. You said basically caution. You use the word crash. You use the word, reality, possible war. I mean, those are things that sometimes we get caught up in this, as you said earlier, fear of missing out in the excitement of the market, then you're not thinking. And so you're saying, be a thinking person here as you invest your money and go through that process. Sir, so well done. As always, I so appreciate you being with us, and thank you so much for joining us today and being a part of the program.
Like I said, it's always a pleasure, and good luck on the rest of the year. I guess we'll check in again in October.
Absolutely. I always want to get that October report. That's the crash date. That's what you said. Thank you, Rusty. Appreciate
you,
man.
That's right. Could be an interesting update. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Care. Well, Scott, if you listen to Rusty and you get that idea of the fear of missing out, that's kind of what's fueling the market, according to what he's saying.
Yeah, I think you always have to take a bit of a skeptical look at the market when you see emotions getting out of control. I think there's a lot of wisdoms in the market when people are thinking soberly and doing analysis and looking at the facts, as Rusty said. But there are times when emotions start to take over, whether that's, the fear of the loss and the fear of the downturn or the fear of the missing out. And I do think some of the excitement around AI has certainly elevated some of the top stocks. Rusty mentioned the top seven. I hear the mega cap eight mentioned a lot. And those have been the biggest benefactors of this latest rally in the market. You start to see the PE multiples or the price to earnings of those getting into a little lofty territory. But I think there's also, if you look in the broad market, there's still a lot of opportunity out there in widening out and looking at some of the other investment opportunities out there. So I think that, although I do agree with Rusty a lot that there has been a lot of excitement in the market and that could tend to turn around at some point, I do think there are pockets or areas of the market that are a little more attractively priced right now and could present some opportunities.
What I like about talking with Rusty is he always gives us some of that. He's very realistic. He's a realist.
Absolutely.
He's a thinker. He does the analysis work, and then he makes decisions. He's not an emotional investor.
Right.
And we talk about the third principle being the fear of missing out. Don't get caught up in that, because that's so critical, and that's what people have a tendency to do.
And I think a lot of what Rusty was talking about, that always brings us back to our guiding principles. We always talk about the asset allocation, diversification, and rebalance, and having a portfolio designed around a well-established plan and not just getting emotional.
Well, that's key. When we come back, you're going to answer the question about buying a house. Should I use my 401k to withdraw it or take a loan? Those are questions. This has come from Ron and Lynn. We're going to dive into that. But I got a question before we go to break, guys. I want you to pay attention. Shannon, wake up over there. Shannon's getting involved in things. He's going to talk about healthcare when we come back. And Scott's going to answer the question and talk a little bit about some of the things we should be concerned about and how to invest with the market. But here's the question. Adjusted for purchasing power. The average income in Mississippi, America's kind of considered its poorest state, lowest income, is higher than that of what European country. Stay with us. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information is not investment advice or recommendation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested.
Policy loans and withdrawals may create an adverse tax result, and withdrawals may be subject to additional taxation and penalties. You should consult your tax advisor when considering taking a policy loan or withdrawal. Qualified distributions must meet a 5-year holding period and satisfy one of 3 additional requirements: reaching age 59 and a half, disability, or death. If not meeting, they will be subject to a 10% penalty in addition to income tax. Plan provisions may impact withdrawal availability.
Helping you make the most of your money. Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.
Neither Shoemaker Financial nor Securian Financial Services are affiliated with Rusty Leonard or Stewardship Partners. The views and opinions expressed are those of Rusty Leonard only and have not been presented on behalf of or endorsed by Securian Financial Services, Inc. or Shoemaker Financial.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Shoemaker. You're listening to Talk Money right here on News Talk 98.9, The Roar of Memphis. We thank you so much for being a part of the program. We've got a question coming up. Ron and Lynn have asked us about buying a house. They really want to know about their down payment. They're short of down payment money. They've got a question about using their 401k. Should they make a withdrawal or a loan? Scott's going to get into that question with us in a few minutes and talk about a few things as far as some investment principles. And Shannon Dyson has some questions, your questions. Do you feel in control of your health care costs, whether you're an employee or you're the employer? Boy, I tell you what, health care costs can really cripple your budget. And we want to talk about that. And Shannon's going to make sure we understand that. But first, just before the break, I asked the question, adjusted for purchasing power, the average income in Mississippi, which was, it's considered America's poorest state or the lowest income state, but it's higher than what country in Europe? And the answer is, from National Review this July of 2023, the answer, surprisingly, is France. What do you think? That's kind of a shocker, isn't it? You know, Scott?
That's an interesting little fact.
It is an interesting fact.
I wouldn't have guessed France. I was trying to, as you asked the question, I was thinking through what the answer might be, and I would not have picked France. But maybe that explains some of the turmoil over there in the streets.
It could be. It could be. I mean, Tyler was going through all the, you know, a lot of different, you know, I mean, that's, you know, all of us were thinking different than France. But, you know, again, I appreciate the fact that National Review prints that, and we want to share it with you. And way to go, Mississippi. You know, now if you started seeing a whole bunch of people from France moving to Mississippi and you got little, you know, there's French speaking, we know what's going on. I hear you. Okay, guys. Now, listen, you know, here's the question. And I think this is a good question from Ron and Lynn. They're wanting to buy a house. This came from a guy that's in the real estate business. And he asked and he says, okay, here's the question. They want to buy a house. They want to use, they don't have enough money saved to meet what the mortgage company is saying they need to set aside. No, they're saying 20% of the house value. Their question was, can we use our 401k to either borrow the money from the 401k or should we withdraw it from the 401k? And Scott, that's a question I think a lot of people have, because especially at this time with rates going up and the demand's there, and they still want to buy a house. So what's your take? How would you start answering that question if they were sitting in the office?
Well, and again, I put this caveat out there. There's no right or wrong answer to this question, and it really depends on your personal situation. So I think as you're thinking through these types of decisions, it is really good to get down and sit with somebody who really understands your situation and what you're trying to do
and help you think through the pros and cons. Personal situation, are you talking about their what's the trustee, what does the 401k that they are participating in, what does it allow? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that's one thing. I was speaking more toward the couple's personal financial situation, their total financial picture. But yeah, there's always, with what options are available in your plan, you always have to check, your plan documents to see what is allowed. Does your plan allow loans? What are the terms that it allows for withdrawals? So let's talk through that a little bit, and then we'll talk about some of the pros and cons of tapping into the 401k. I think it can be an option for some people and could be the right option. You always have to remember that anything that you pull out of your 401k plan prior to age 59 and a half, if you're taking a withdrawal, is going to incur not only taxes, but also a 10% penalty. So, if I'm gonna be able to take a withdrawal out of my 401k to help with that down payment, then that is going to incur taxes and penalties. So you have to factor that in. Now, let's talk about withdrawals. So with most 401k plans, since this is designed to be a savings plan for retirement, in order to pull money out and to take a withdrawal, now there are situations where if you're over a certain age, your plan will allow what's called an in-service withdrawal. But if you're under that in-service withdrawal age, you have to qualify for what's called a hardship. Now, could you make the argument that the purchase of a home is a hardship? Possibly. That'll be a determination that's made by the plan sponsor or the employer to decide whether that's a hardship or not, to where you, even if you're allowed to take a withdrawal out of the plan. But the second option is to take that loan out of the plan.
So let's talk about withdrawal. Okay. That's the first option. Go and get the money, but make sure you can do that. You got a lot of questions, a lot of your personal finances. I mean, if a person's withdrawing, and again, is there an amount that's the maximum that you can pull out of this thing, or
for a hardship withdrawal? Not so much. It's will the plan allow it, and what are the terms around which it will allow it? For a loan, there are limits to what you can borrow from the plan,
right,
and that limit is $50,000. Now, it's all based on your vested balance, right? Usually, the plan will say something like 50% of your vested balance up to $50,000. So if you've got $10,000 in the plan, then maybe your max loan amount is $5,000. So it's going to depend on your situation and how much money you have in the plan. But that is not a bad option if that's the only place you have to go to get money. Now, you have to remember that loan has to be paid back, usually over a five-year period. There are, in some plan instances, some extended periods of payback based on the fact that you're buying a home for your primary residence, but you'd have to check with your plan. But in most cases, a 401k loan has to be paid back in 5 years, so you're going to have a five-year payback schedule. There will be interest on the loan, but you will essentially pay yourself back that interest. There may be a little spread for the record keeper for administration costs, but normally you're paying yourself back the interest. So as you're putting the money back into the plan, you are paying it back to yourself, but you are pulling your money out of an invested situation and basically taking it out of the market. So that all those decisions have to be factored in. And I think, when you think about, okay, there are some pros, that is a place where I can go get money. It may be cheaper for me to borrow the money and pay myself back the interest. I am limited to that $50,000 or 50% of my balance. But I also have to pay that back. So what is that going to do to my cash flows? That's normally paid back, coming out of your paycheck every week. So they're going to deduct that loan payment out of your paycheck.
Is there a limit of time? Can you go 30 years on this or 10?
No, like I said, 5 years. Typically, okay. There are some extensions potentially for a home purchase. You'd have to check your plan to see if it allows a longer payback period. But it's not going to be the 30 years. It's going to be, more like probably 10 and under in most cases.
Scott, what I hear you answered a lot of the questions, and you covered a plethora of information here. But what I'm hearing and kind of sensing is if a person's thinking about doing this, Ron and Lynn, if they're thinking about doing this as a couple, they want to buy the home, and they've been saving money,
right?
But they're short a certain amount of money, and I don't know how much money they're short, but they're short, and they're asking the question, can I pull it from my 401k? You're really saying, first of all, get some counsel on your personal financial situation. It may be better to not purchase a home and just continue to save money until you can make the down payment. Maybe change the what you're trying to buy. Sometimes we get caught up in what we see and we get that emotional side of that. And then again, look at your plan. Talk to your employer. The record keeper is going to make some decisions, and the employer would help you understand what those decisions are. So it's not just a slam dunk. It's not one little simple answer. It's a lot of things going on.
No, I think you really have to weigh those pros and cons and look at what are my alternatives if I don't take the money out of the plan. Is there another option out there that may be better for me? So you remember, when you're pulling money out of your plan, if you're doing a withdrawal, you're interrupting your long-term compounding. You may be able to make it up by saving in the future, but you're taking money out of the plan that would be invested in growing. There's always that 10% penalty to think about in taxes if you're thinking about doing a withdrawal. You know, in a loan situation, again, you're pulling that money out of the market, so you're interrupting that compounding and could potentially be affecting your cash flow because you're going to have to pay that loan back. And I would say, you know, there's loans out there where you can put down less than 20% through FHA and other programs, so that may be something to look into. There's usually some mortgage insurance involved with that, so you have to weigh the pros and cons of that. Do you have other sources of money? Do you have an IRA or possibly a Roth IRA? Roth IRAs are a little friendlier to pull money out of if you're under 59 and a half and you've been putting money in there. So that may be an option to look at if that's available. So long story short, Jim, there's no cut and dry answer to this. It's a very personalized decision. And I think it would be, I would always recommend sitting down and talking through the pros and cons with somebody who truly understands your total financial
and
situation.
A trusted advisor, really good real estate agent, a good banker, mortgage company. Those are things, just find somebody that you can really get good advice. It's not just a slam dunk. And that's what I think that's what you really good answers, though, Scott. For Scott, I think you've done a great job for Ron and Lynn and helping them understand that. Now, when Rusty was on, we were talking about the market and how it had pushed itself up. And we've talked about some principles that we need to kind of understand. Know yourself. I mean, when the market's up, do I jump on the bandwagon or do when the market's down, do I say? So knowing yourself, we talked about being principle number one. And then principle number two, don't lose money. Don't go out and buy that investment that sounds good, turns out to be fraud or a scam or something. So don't get caught up in that, and don't buy that.
Or hopping in on those investments that may be good investments. And if you'd gotten in it at the right time, back here when maybe the investment was cheaper, it may be good. But you may be jumping in right before the investment has a big pullback. Because that typically happens with herd mentality.
Getting caught up in this following the herd mentality,
right,
the fear of missing out. And that's what you're saying. Don't let that happen. How do we describe that? What do we say to people about fear of missing out?
Well, I think that falls under that category of emotional decisions, and it comes back to Jim. I talk about this a lot, and it may get repetitive, but it's having that plan, having that strategy ahead of time, looking at those guiding principles. What am I trying to accomplish? What are my goals? Based on my goals, how am I going to allocate my assets? Based on my goals, my risk tolerance, and all that, and operate within that plan and within that strategy. Don't let emotions derail your strategy, whether that's fear of missing out. You see a particular sector of the market or a particular stock that's doing extremely well, and you think, boy, I better get in on this because everybody's making money but me, and if I don't get in on this now, wow, there I go. That is not the mentality of a long-term successful investor. Sticking with the plan, having a plan, sticking with the strategy, and get some guidance. I think it's always good to have somebody to bounce ideas off of to bring you back down to earth when you are getting ready to jump towards something that may be harmful in the long run.
I think that's perfect advice. I think the idea behind be careful not to respond to the media, getting caught up in, as you said, emotionally, and be disciplined. Think long term. Great advice from Scott Jordan as he's answered the questions from Ron and Lynn, and also kind of dealing with what's going on in the market right now, the fear of missing out, getting caught up in that. But I'm so glad to introduce our next guest, Shannon Dyson. He's the Vice President of Shoemaker Insurance Solutions and does a great job in answering questions that a lot of people have, especially have you ever felt like you're totally out of control when it comes to your health care cost. And whether it's personal, whether you're the employer or the employee, health care costs are rising at an uncontrollable rate. And Scott, stay with us, because this is, it's one of those things that's such an important discussion, because as we talked with Shannon in so many discussions before, we've been kind of talking about this CAA, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, which is something, you know, Shannon, you introduced to us probably 6 months ago, that's really about the employer all of a sudden stepping into the role because of legislation as a fiduciary. And I think that is so important. We deal with it with our 401k plans through ERISA, the fiduciary mindset. And yet, you know, it's like, I don't understand sometimes how that we are in this role, but what happens when you feel like that your healthcare cost is uncontrollable or just totally out of control? Shannon, I really want to hear from you.
Yeah, it makes the whole CAA and putting an employer in a fiduciary responsibility and then talking in the same breath about uncontrollable healthcare costs, it really does frame it quite nicely to say an employer now has a responsibility to actually step up and do something about those uncontrollable costs, or they may face some sort of penalties or get in some sort of trouble. So we have to, as an employer, as advisors to employers, we have to make it clear that just sitting on the sidelines and renewing health plans year in, year out, you could be putting yourself at some risk by doing that.
With the CAA, I mean, I heard someone say it is what it is. I mean, just, you know, this uncontrollable growth. I mean, if you look at a graph, it's just like a mountain, and it just keeps going up. There's no valleys in it at all. So in reality, is it what it is? I mean,
it makes you feel that way. You see these increases in year over year. If you have an insurance consultant that comes to your office and they say, well, we're getting a 10% rate increase this year, but I think we can get it down to 6. Okay, well, that's great, but we're spending $1 million a year in premium.
Still climbing.
And we're still climbing. And so you have a good claims year, and you think, well, I have a good claims year. We had really low claims, so maybe we'll get a decrease in our premiums. Well, that doesn't happen. You still get an increase. And if you have a really bad claims year, you're just hoping, man, I hope we can still afford this, and how high are we going to have to raise our deductibles to bring prices down? So it's not a great decision that you have year in, year out.
You know, when you talk about this, I think biggest thing I see, what's the impact? I mean, we talk about employers, and they get that rate increase, and it's an expense, and it goes to their bottom line. It deals with their profit. But the employee is making, they're buying groceries, they're buying clothes, they're sending kids to school, they're trying to buy new houses. We talked to Ron and Lynn a few 1 minutes ago about what their question was. But what does it do to the person on the street, like you, me, all of us that are paying our health care costs? It seems to go up and up. What's your take on that? What's happening?
Well, I think, you know, prices going up, sometimes you can make sense of it. You can say, well, if prices are going up, but yet we're getting really good care and things are going in the right direction, maybe I can be okay with that. But when you see studies that are done from Johns Hopkins that says when they list the leading causes of death in the U.S., heart disease number one, cancer number two, preventable medical mistakes as the number three leading cause of death in the United States.
Preventable medical mistake.
And that's a hard pill to swallow, to see that as an actual statistic that they're releasing. And you mentioned higher premiums. We just talked about that from employers. Well, those are passed on to employees. And if you look at the rising premiums, out-of-pocket costs for employers, you take health care versus food costs, how those have increased over the last 15 to 20 years. Health care versus housing. Health care versus transportation. Healthcare has gone up 24.9% since 2007. Those that I mentioned, buying food, housing, transportation, those have gone down over that same time period. Now, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had an increase in
some
of those inflation. So this study was obviously done before we've had the inflation, but it still proves the point that healthcare inflation, healthcare premium inflation. I think we need to be careful about when we're talking about healthcare inflation to make sure that we are emphasizing, we believe it's more premium inflation than it is actual healthcare cost inflation.
Premium inflation. Scott, I mean, from a fiduciary, what does that say to us? I mean, from, you know, somebody working with that from a pension standpoint, if it was something like that premium, that doesn't sound good.
Well, I think, and, you know, when we've talked about this on the show before, we talk about the fact that although I don't want to put myself in the place of the employer having to become a fiduciary on this, but I think bringing that fiduciary role to the system has the potential to bring more transparency to the system so that everybody understands clearly what they're paying for. I mean, we saw this in the 401k world where the more pressure that was put on the sponsors to be fiduciaries, the more they started analyzing the cost and looking at everything. And in turn, that tended to bring the cost down over time because it became more transparent. So I think the possibility here is that the fiduciary role of the plan of the healthcare sponsor could bring more transparency and maybe rein in some of these costs a little bit.
Well, I think it is common sense when you look at what drives healthcare costs. But what you said is exactly right, Scott. It will make employers who are smart individuals.
Right.
When you start looking into, okay, well, this makes sense. If we're doing this, this is obviously going to drive costs up. But if we do this, we can bring costs down. There are some common sense fixes to the system, fixes that are being done all across the country. It's just a matter of concentrating on those and figuring out what those are for your employer base.
All right, you lead me into this then, because you mentioned common sense. You said smart, common sense. Those things are pretty powerful words. Tell me about what you're seeing across the country that is that smart thought process. How do you get control of this? Because, I mean, I can't remember the last time that somebody told me my healthcare cost had gone down.
Right.
Yeah. I just don't remember.
That's not something you hear.
It's not something you hear.
Maybe I've forgotten. Okay, never mind.
One thing that I think we have to keep in mind is that and this is not, we're not saying anything bad about private companies wanting to make a profit, but insurance carriers are private companies, and so they are looking to make a profit. I think a lot of times we think, well, they're going to take care of us. Well, yeah, but they are out to make a profit, and the largest carriers, insurance carriers, in quarter three of last year made $11 billion in profits.
And so, they're stock companies.
And they're stock companies, and their stock price has benefited from
and
that.
And that's, by the way, that's for the stockholder.
Absolutely. They have to do that for their stockholders. Exactly, correct. And so I think when we start thinking about common sense and things that we can do, the first thing is taking advantage of the new transparency laws that have been passed. We need to know what things cost. And I think that has been the biggest cost inflator over the years. If you're just paying something with a credit card and you have no idea what it costs, and the person that's charging you doesn't tell you what it costs because they don't know what it costs, that's a problem. And so we have to be able to use these transparency laws and figure out, okay, what is the cost of, as an example, an MRI at this location versus an MRI if I drive 2 minutes further down the road? And you could see that could be a cost difference of $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 difference for the exact same MRI, just different facilities charge different amounts for the MRI. So it would make sense to shop that like you do anything else. When you're going to the grocery store and you pick out something, you shop for the best price. We don't do that in healthcare because we haven't been given the opportunity to do that in healthcare. So breaking apart what I call a fully insured insurance plan, from an employer perspective, making that a self-funded plan. We've talked about self-funding on this program before. It gives you the opportunity to dig into these prices on things that are high, things that you do all the time, and lowering those costs.
You know, that's what I think is critical. I heard the word self-funded. That's kind of the fiduciary mindset, taking charge of what you're doing, working through a plan to benefit the employer and the employee at the same time. It's fully transparent. I want to talk some more about that. We'll have you back on the program because I think we've got to hammer what that really means.
Sure.
So let me say this. I want to thank my guests, of course, Rusty Leonard and Scott Jordan and Shannon Dyson. If you'd like to talk to any one of these people, just simply call them at 901-757-5757. If you have questions, type them to Jim, J-I-M, to the text line, 901-683-0989, or you can send them to talkmoney@shoemakerfinancial.com. Next week, my guest, Steve Anderson, and Scott Jordan, we're going to talk about inflation and fundamentals and what do we see at the end of the year. Paul Malley will be with us talking about five wishes, aging with dignity. That's Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and Sunday at 9 a.m. I want to thank my producer, Tyler Springs and Maximilian, guest and content coordination, Francis Fortner, production and marketing assistant, Lauren Norsworthy, and compliance officer, Tommy Armstrong. Thanks so much for listening. We're for you here every week, helping you make the most of your money. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
Jim Shoemaker and Scott Jordan are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. This has been Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.